Welcome, travelers. I'm Josh.
I'm Glenn.
And I'm Lee Wanika. And this is Tabletop Journeys, where we will be your not-so-humble guides on the quest for RPG adventures.
Here at Tabletop Journeys, we are all devoted role players and storytellers at heart, and we absolutely love sharing our passion with you. On our show, we feature diverse tabletop RPG systems, demonstrating them through actual plays and breaking down the rules to provide you with tips, tools, and techniques to help you navigate them. We also love bringing the content creators behind these games into the studio to give you a peek behind the curtain with relevant and insightful interviews.
Let us help you get the most out of your story, no matter what game world or system you're playing. Because detailed settings, heroic characters, diverse NPCs, and a focus on story over rules can make any campaign legendary. Now, here's a message from friends of the show.
Hey, everybody, we're the hosts of 2 Weeks, One Shot, a tabletop RPG variety podcast.
We play one-shot campaigns in a variety of systems.
With a variety of guests from all around the TTRPG scene.
And obviously, I bring a certain je ne sais quoi to every performance.
I never trusted jellyfish as one of my space racism.
Let's talk about how every time I run a game, you guys manage to find like the weirdest take you can possibly give on it.
Have you accepted one of my bugs into your body so that we can communicate telepathically?
No, get your bug. No bugs in my body.
First sign of trouble. Shoot it! Shoot it with the gun!
Find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search 2 Weeks, One Shot.
Are we ever going to have a serious discussion about playing furry pirates?
No. I
said it's red.
I'm talking about it.
So I'll take that as a yes.
Welcome, everybody, to today's episode. Really excited to have a former guest on the show back tonight to go ahead and talk some awesome TTRPG stuff. But before we get cracking with all of that stuff, ladies and gentlemen, the cream in my coffee, Mr. Glenn Myers, the pudding in my pudding cup, Mr. Lee Wanika Miller.
Wait, objection.
Wait.
On the grounds of Faye, Your Honor. In our last actual play of Faye, I was putting.
You were putting. That's true. So Glenn, how are you doing? I see that you seem to be back in the RV tonight. Where is Glenn today?
Wouldn't you like to know?
I would like to know. It's part of the game on the show. Yeah.
No, we did move again, and now I am in Carrollton, Virginia.
Yeah.
It's about an hour outside of Virginia Beach. My wife has a friend in Carrollton and her sister in Virginia Beach.
Mr. Miller there, how are you doing this fine evening?
Everything's going really well. Look, we are plugging away at the factions book. Mm. We're deep in our reviews. I'm loving the stuff that I'm reading that the two of you have written. I went through a chapter recently that had really very little specific feedback for me, just some nuanced ideas, dovetailing on what some of the other editorial ideas were. And anything I did was more of an addition because a cool idea struck me when I was reading it. I'm like, hey, if we have the page count and the word count for this, we should put this in. I think that's a wonderful place to be, and I'm really looking forward to continuing with that. Look, you recorded because you ran the game. Glenn, you played in the game. Mm-hmm. Honestly, what I feel is the finest episode of Star Trek Preservations we have ever recorded and aired.
I appreciate that. Episode 3 was a whole lot of fun to run.
It's a good time to play too.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that because that was an episode that I took some chances on. I tried to do some things in that episode that you don't always get to see. And a lot of it, honestly, was me sitting back and just watching the magic happen and every once in a while throwing some crap at you. It was amazing, right? When you were talking with Bill Barato the other day, the episode that came out on YouTube, I left a comment on there about how different our storytelling style is and that while you are like precision, everything's important, every detail is important, that is not the way that I storytell. And how did I put it? That I may not always have all the answers, but I always have the consequences because I go ahead and leave it up to my players to go ahead and come up with a lot of those answers for me. It's a good time. Yeah.
I would also go on to say, and had I seen that comment while I was on Bill's show, because he was asking us, how do you GM with a co-GM situation?
Yeah.
Having seen your comment, in conjunction with having now listened to that episode that aired that same week. In fact, while you were recording the last bit of that, I was doing the interview. We both signed into our different conversations at the same time. But what I realized is because I love listening to the games you run, that allows me to get the details from what you run. So then the payoff for what you do happens in mine. And then you're able to set up another thing when you do yours. Our ability to go back and forth is so much fun. It really makes it great for me.
I can go as far off the rails as I want because I know that whatever wackadoodle bullcrap I throw at people, you will go ahead and make them pay for it. So it's fantastic. You know, so
it's pretty cool.
Speaking of wackadoodle bullcrap, let us go ahead and reintroduce friend of the show, Jay Moore. It's been probably close to 2 years since you've been on the show to go ahead and talk about Faye. How the heck are you?
Hey, guys. Yeah, it's been 2 years. So, sheesh, last time I was on here was even before the Kickstarter for Faye. And since then, it's been a roller coaster. The Kickstarter did great. And then we rushed right into expansions, games. Yep. We now have miniatures. I now have a team of game masters for conventions all over the place. It's been a blast.
Yeah. I hope that you understand that when I say wackadoodle bullcrap, that is like the highest level of compliment that I can pay a game. I actually have
a small tear in the corner of my eye.
Excellent. Before we get into the question and answer portion of our show this evening, though, Jay, so for folks that didn't hear the show a couple of years ago, what is Faye? Let's start there.
Okay, so the game of Fae, the premise is that you are in the modern day human world and you are a monster. You're basically playing things that technically don't exist. And as long as the people around you still don't think you exist, then you've accomplished your mission. You can be good, you can be bad. People like to be bad.
We were very bad.
You guys were.
We weren't that bad. We didn't kill anybody that we weren't supposed to kill. The people we were killing were sanctioned by the Fae Council because they were exposing the Fae, not us.
I think there was some gray area there, but that's...
Might have been a gray area.
I'm fighting
gray
the urge
matter
to break into...
area?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm fighting the urge to break into a Michael Jackson song.
Yeah. So those of you who did not hear this last time I was on, they essentially were a group of monsters that were unleashed into a mall after hours in order to hunt down another Fae creature that was there messing with people. And so they considered the people that were still in the mall to be compromised.
Yes, exactly. And just wanted to make sure that there was no ambiguity about whether or not our existence would become realized. Like that was.
And we didn't want anybody to think we were discriminatory. We came into that mall to kill everybody. So if we left somebody alive, they would have been like, why didn't they kill me? That's
why didn't they kill me?
That was a very PC of you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Everyone's the same.
Nobody wants any survivor complexes. Everything,
Carnage for all.
Yes. Equal opportunity mayhem.
So I think
that's what we did.
let's dive into the crazy roller coaster that has been Faye over the last couple of years, gentlemen. So fan roll dice to the ready. So in true Faye spirit, we're going to roll 2d6. Highest number goes first. Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
That was a 5 for me.
12, baby.
Failure of competition on my side.
Double sixes. Right.
I'm calling shenanigans.
I mean,
he called you shenanigans.
Yes. Fantastic radio of Lee Winika showing us his dice. There we go.
They were 2 sixes. One of them was upside down.
Yeah. He got 2 9s. I think he got 18.
He got an 18. Exactly.
Even better. I mean, I can't lose.
Tough to do on 2 6-sided dice, but super impressed, bro.
All right, Mr. That's Miller, why don't you get this party started, right?
Yeah. So,
get this party started quickly.
There you go. I'm not the only one who could throw out some musical references. Jay, of all of us here, I get the pleasure of getting to hang with you on a bit more of a regular basis as we tour the convention and gaming circuit. Like, we've been at King Kong, we've been at Total Con. I believe we're both going to be at Rising Phoenix as well. I'm actually hoping that my schedule works out just well enough where maybe I can grab a seat at one of your tables.
I have one spot still open, only one. Ooh. On Sunday, if you want to nab it, if you can.
I am waiting to find out if I can get out of work. If I can get out of work, I will be there because I have a ticket for the entire weekend, but I'm currently scheduled to work on Sunday.
I can be your doc. Need me to call in as your doctor?
Absolutely.
We'll call in and tell them that you're clearly ill.
Or we can just send in Puddin to handle business. No, I'm just kidding.
We'll go in there and lay down some fake bullshit.
Yeah, right? With all the time that's passed, I've had the opportunity to see you do a lot with Faye. I see the art. I see you at all the spots. I also get to see you run the game. Like, we were at TotalCom. We both were running in the same room. And I think there was at least one other game in that room with us. But all I heard was the laughter and the enjoyment coming from your table and my table. Like, we really carried
the room.
Them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we carried the room for real. And
neighbors.
Yeah, we are the worst people on the block. Absolutely. But I just love what I got to see. I love getting to hang with you and watching you talk about a game that you absolutely love. So my first bit is less of a question for me and more of share with the audience the expansions that have come out since you were here last, Beyond the Core Rules, and talk about some of the different adventures that you have. Let the audience get a taste of what is a cool game, because often independent games have a core book, maybe one or two things here or there, and I'm looking at your drive-through page, and it's prolific. There's a lot of material here that players, not enough to drown them out so they don't know where to start, because it's the core book, it's the player's guide, it's a free character sheet, and then it's here are some adventures. Knock us out with that, and then tell us about the expansion.
Okay. You started by talking about the rule book. That was the first thing that came out. Obviously, you need a rule book. That's how we start. But then I quickly realized through conventions mostly that I needed to have one-shot adventures with pre-generated characters that I could sit down with a table of people who have never played Fae before and play in anywhere from 2 to 6 hours, depending on the time slot, depending on the type of convention. So I just started creating these one-shots that, again, had pre-generated characters, anywhere from 4 to 6 characters, and they were designed to have different ways of playing depending on the time you have for your party. I started designing them specifically for conventions. But, of course, I'm an artist, so they're fully illustrated. I created all the adversaries, maps, everything else, and before I knew it, I had stacks of all these different one-shot adventures that I was running at conventions. And people wanted them because they're designed to take people that don't know how to play the game and they can just be handed a couple sheets. It's all the information they need as players. So it's turned into a thing where the one-shot adventures are like board game night for people. Okay, I grabbed this Fae one. We're going to play this one tonight. Like the mall one that you guys played, Black Fae Day. It's designed that you can sit down with a group of people that have never played the game before. It gives them enough information, like you guys saw. You had a sheet with the character on it, and then a sheet with all your abilities. So as soon as somebody goes over the basic rules of the dice, you can just play. So all these adventures were set up that way. And before I knew it, I think right now I have 11 different one-shot adventures.
Pretty close to that. I could do the count, but my math is bad. We're going to stick with 11.
It's like this many and that many.
Yeah.
Like rolling 2d6 and getting 18.
A year's worth of convention one-shots currently.
And the great thing about them, some of them, such as the mall one you guys have played, I play that one at every convention. It's a crowd favorite. It's never played the same way twice. Ever. And I've played that one adventure probably 25, 30 times at this point. And no two have ended at all like each other, which makes it great because the players really can steer it whatever direction they want to go in. Perfect example, during the last mall one we played, Pudding the Troll, a 10-foot tall, bloodthirsty troll, fell in love with the girl at the fountain. And they kept passing and nailing charm checks with each other. So he just picked her up and carried her off, didn't care about the mission anymore, ignored his boss. It was a beautiful moment. I'm like, I can't believe this is happening, but you guys are just off into the sunset.
Wow. And we created amazing. Fountain Fried Silky in that scene.
Yeah, we did. That's hysterical.
At first, she was trying to be nice to him because he was right there, and if she was mean, he was going to crush her. But then the charm checks started happening, and I'm like, you know what? She likes you. It was a weird moment, but it turned into a romance assassination.
Hey,
as one does. Yeah. I made a comment very similar on the show I was on recently where I said, there are some adventures that I have run multiple times and they've never come out the same way. And that is a hallmark of a great adventure. If you find your adventure being run the exact same way all the time, you've written something that's clearly a bit prescriptive, because if that's the way that every single group of players handles it, then that's pretty straightforward. It is not filled with those twists and turns and the things that make these adventures exciting. As importantly, even if that's fun, the challenge is, as a game master, it gets unfun fast if it's done the exact same way every time. So I love the fact that you're finding that experience. That's the key to great adventures. And there are so many good ones to look at. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, thank you. So
I have a quick follow-up question to the adventures as well, if you don't mind. I love that you designed the adventures to teach the players to play and that they come with all of the things that they need and that the adventure is designed in a way to introduce them to the mechanics as they go through it. That's something that I noticed when we played with you, specifically designing the adventure to introduce the game a step and a mechanic at a time. What I didn't have the opportunity to do, though, was run one of your adventures to see how Fae Day was written from the GM's perspective. Do you feel that you also nailed it on that front? Does the GM's portion of Fae Day take a new GM for Fae through the process of how to run the game, or do they need to have a little bit more core knowledge before they dive in?
So it's hard for me to see it from outside of having the core knowledge, being the game designer.
Of course.
But I do know a lot of people have purchased ones they haven't played to play with other people. I do believe the game master in these situations needs to be more knowledgeable with the rules. You can't just buy one of the one-shot adventures and play it without the rule book as far as the game master side of it goes.
Of course.
So the game master does need to know more than the players. It's designed so that the players can be new, but the game master needs to at least be familiar with the mechanics.
Fantastic.
Because the players are going to do things that are not spelled out on those sheets all the time, and you need to know how to roll with them.
We all know that the players are going to go the opposite direction of what you think they're going to do.
They're going to do wackadoodle things, like try to romance a Selkie when they're a 10-foot troll. Like That's right.
And you know what? It, especially with a game like Fae, it's a role-play first, rules second kind of a game. There are plenty of rules, and I even have charts where I even specify in the rule book, these are for the person that needs to have it. Don't feel like you need to break down like falling distances combined with weight and speed. And I have all that stuff in there for the rule mongers, but you don't have to use it unless you have players that need it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I love the fact that it's know your table and then go with the pieces that fit your table. That's brilliant.
Yep.
That's brilliant design, one, and it's great direction. And it allows GMs, wherever their experience level lies, to adapt and get better at their game because it's giving you a bit of knowledge that most GM resources fail to mention, that you got to adapt what you do. And Jay, you and I talked even at the last con we were at briefly, and I've talked a lot at most of the events I've been at there and since. There needs to be more learn to play. There needs to be more learn to play. My son went to that con. He's going to Rising Phoenix con, and there's some games that he really wants to get into and learn how to play. But unfortunately, everything for that game is all organized play or all expert games. And I've been talking to some of the convention promoters, because every game I run at conventions, generally it's all learn to play. I don't tend to run greater than that because I'm running lesser known games. You can get a little bit more expert if you're talking about D&D, right? But I'm running Star Trek Adventures. I'm running Army Men. I'm running Everyday Heroes. So I'm running the types of games where we need people to kind of feel comfortable trying the game. And I find that I'm now talking to promoters, please ask whoever's setting up all the organized play for the event, give me two tables a night of learn to play. I bet you if you did that Thursday, Friday, by Saturday, everybody's filling up those empty seats at your organized play tables.
Right.
So that's my mantra. I'm going to get off the soapbox, but I hope you also carry that forward. Doesn't matter what convention we go to, we just need more learn to play. GMs, or especially for you forever GMs, if there's a game you want to play and you're like, I can never find a group, go to a convention and run it. And then hopefully some of those people will be running it the next time you go to that same convention. Right.
So that kind of segues into the next step. So going back to your original question about what I've been developing, this is my second year now with Fae that we've started. I've started going back to conventions that I was at last year. And a lot of the people that sign up for the games played it last year. They want to experience something new. So some of them pick new adventures. But I've also realized, like, all right, now I have returning players, which is a kind of a different, like, how do I reward returning players? So I started developing Crimson Scatter is the series I'm working on right now, where I have a whole bunch of pre-generated characters. They're only half completed. You pick one and then you finish it, and it's your own personal character. And when you play it in the first adventure, it's an initiation into a cult, basically. And if you succeed, I give you some experience points, you keep your character sheet, and I log it in. So next year, returning players, you can bring their character back, and like their character is now more powerful, and it becomes the once a year campaign kind of a situation. So I created that for the returning players. And also, I have a new one shot called Blind Science. I've had new players play it. It's a little tricky because the premise is that you have 100% amnesia at the beginning of the adventure, and you learn triggers as you're doing stuff in the game to relearn things you forgot. It's hard to teach people how to play when they have a blank character sheet in front of them. We were able to do it, but the last one I did, I think half the table were people that were already familiar with the game. So it made it easier that, like, if somebody's all of a sudden handed an ability, the person next to them can tell them what that actually does. And, oh, okay. Not that the game's very complicated. You guys have played before that. Yeah. If you read an ability, it pretty much spells out how it works.
Yeah.
So I've been developing a couple of new rewards for returning players. And I've actually started writing my first large campaign book. I have a one-shot called Fae Noir, which is the noir story. The main character to pick from in the pre-gens is named Gumshoe, and he actually has sticky shoes so he can walk up walls. But you're essentially a bunch of tiny fae creatures that live in a giant abandoned factory, and the only resource you had to learn how humans live was a box of leftover noir books that were left behind in this factory. So you've developed your whole society based on noir. So everybody is playing roles, yes, from different noir settings. There are unions that make sure things happen, like the stars in the sky and the moon. They're all being handled by essentially like a stage crew for theatrics, but they're all fae creatures. So I wrote it as a one-shot, but I started developing the world of it, and it's so thick with great stuff. I was like, this is a campaign. You could play for years in this setting. So I didn't release it as a one shot. I'm actually creating it as a campaign setting. So that's going to be my first full campaign setting book that I'm going to have out. And then the other thing that I've done is I had my first expansion get launched in January called Fae Forgotten, which is a whole new series of creatures. The main premise of Fae Forgotten, in the main books, everyone plays fae creatures from Avalon. You're all have reasons why you're in the mortal realm, and it's usually because you're doing some sort of bidding for some power from Avalon. Like, you guys were sent to assassinate a meddlesome fae, so that was why you were there. But Fae Forgotten, the premise is these are things that were left behind way back in the Dark Ages when fae left the mortal realm. So they're things that learned how to exist amongst humans. They're disassociated from other fae creatures. They're things that just are part of human culture. Some examples are things like totems, tikis, and stuff like that were created by people, but people believed in them. So when the magic returns, they wake up, that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of things that like are not tied into other fae creatures. They're their own thing. There's a lot of different cultures stuff. There's a lot of Tibetan races and stuff like that in the new book. And then I also get into some other things that I realized were lacking from the original rule book, such as firearms. One thing I didn't think a lot about when I created the original rule book was, if you're going to be in the modern day human world, there are going to be guns. And how do we really work with guns? They're briefly mentioned, and there are some like general stats for them in the original book, but I created a far more dynamic way of using them in Fae Forgotten. It includes things like distances, which makes things less accurate, and also being able to find cover. The larger you are, the easier it is to get hit, but the less damage you take. So I like learned how to balance it. If you're something this size flying around, it's going to be hard to hit you. But if they hit you, you're obliterated.
Yeah.
But so it's a lot of filling in things that I felt like needed more that weren't in the original rulebook. One thing I mentioned briefly in the original rulebook is mixing affinities, which affinities are your powers. And I actually mentioned how you can mix them to create your own. But I didn't really flesh it out clearly in the original rulebook. So in Fae Forgotten, I really get into how you can make them and then give a ton of specific examples. like combining something like the healing ability of photosynthesis with stone armor. And it's basically you're covered with mossy rocks. So it's an armor that heals itself in the sun. That kind of stuff. Like, how do you create these things?
Nice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That you went deep in that, Jay. That's pretty cool. Like, I like that stuff a lot. So nice.
But I've been playing the game now for 3 years. I've been playing it with a group every Tuesday on a live stream. And things come up and I'm like, oh, man, it'd be great if we could really sort this out, make it meatier. So
constantly spawning new ideas.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Constantly. I can't keep up with myself.
Never stop. Never stop.
No.
Welcome to the middle of the show. We wanted to take a minute and thank the people who helped make this show possible, our Patreon supporters. We like to shout out our adventurer level Patreons, so extra big thanks to Tim Morris, Joe Harney, Dave Rideout, Adam Scaramella, and Marty Napier. Patreon supporters get exclusive content, free copies of all of our published and unpublished game supplements, early access to episodes, and free invitations to our monthly games. You can learn more at www.patreon.com/ttjourneys.
Speaking of published material, have you checked out the supplements we have on DM's Guild? We have two full books, The Traveler's Guide to Collaborative Worldbuilding, The Traveler's Guide to the Multiverse, and you can combine it with all of our supplements to make your next role legendary. Go to www.ttjourneys.com/DM's Guild for more information.
If you're looking for Tabletop Journeys swag or need a fantastic set of new dice, then you should check out the Tabletop Journeys Spring Store and our affiliate, FanRoll Dice. You can make your first purchase through FanRoll at 10% off, and every purchase helps support the show. You can learn more about that at www.ttjourneys.com/FanRoll. And if you want to get some awesome t-shirts, hoodies, hats, or other gear, check out www.ttjourneys.com/swag to get redirected to our spring store. These are the same vendors that we use for our add-ons when we do Kickstarters and stand by their products.
But the best way you can support the show is by joining the conversation. Did you love one of the episodes? Did you disagree with something we said? Maybe you just want us to cover your favorite game system a little more or talk about a brand new system. Check us out at linktr.ee/ttjourneys. That's our link tree. And join the conversation.
We hope you're enjoying this week's show. So here comes the second half. Don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to us. And if your platform lets you leave a comment or a rating, why not hit the button and show your support? Thanks again for listening. And now on with the show. Glenn, so 30 minutes into our episode, we're up to question number 2.
I'm ready.
Well, you and Ika did just throw out a first question that was like three questions at once.
That's fair. That's a good question.
Truly Winika style. As we talked about this, we just talked a lot about the various bits and stories that you've got going on within the world of Fae through the adventures that you have and the way that you've put them together. And you mentioned familiarity with mechanics and how the game is actually played. But for our listeners who haven't played Fae or listened to our previous actual play of the game, would you mind going over the basic rolling mechanic and interaction mechanics for Fae and how you take your character and interact with the world? Already covered that it's 2d6 for initiative. No. That's what we rolled tonight.
You did roll 2d6. It's not 2d6. It's a d10 system.
Oh, why did we roll 2d6?
I just read that this was 2d6. No?
Nope.
No, it's a d10. That's okay.
Oh.
There you go.
I forgive you.
Jay, I blame the Fae Mischief because you should have stopped us.
You guys are so excited about the d6s, and I know how difficult it was for you to get them.
That's it. We're going to have to just start over.
We're going to have to start over again.
From the beginning of the episode, Josh, just throw this whole thing in the can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, to be fair, it was only difficult because it was D6s. I had 2D10.
All right, so ignoring the fact that we're...
Morons,
and it's actually a D10 system, spoiler alert. Carry on.
All right, so the basic mechanic of the game, and this applies to just about everything in the game is tied to either your stats or your opponent's stats. All your stats are 1 through 10. 5 is average. The higher it is, the better. The lower it is, the worse. Whenever I'm targeting you in a negative way, I want to roll your number or higher to beat your stat. If I'm casting something on myself, I want to roll my stat number or under. So the very simple rule is you want to roll over the stat number when you're targeting somebody else, and you want to roll under it when you're targeting yourself.
Okay. So
let's say all of you were trying to run across a field together. I would say, everyone give me a speed check. So everybody would roll 1d10, and as long as you rolled your speed or less, you didn't trip over yourself on the way over. If you roll the number exact, that's what's considered a crit. So if you guys were running across the field and you rolled exact and somebody else failed, I would actually let you use your exact to help them out, or you could do something extra flashy by yourself if you want to leave them face down in the mud. It's up to you. But basically, a crit in that kind of situation is a storytelling flourish. Like, how do you want to handle it?
If I recall correctly, that's what Puddin did when I had something bad happen to me, and Puddin picked me up, put me on his shoulder in a weird moment.
Yeah, I believe you guys
left
are
me
sneaking.
Not vulnerable.
You guys were sneaking, and you were about to, like, trip over a potted plant or something.
Yep.
And he nailed the roll, so he just scooped you up before you hit it and kept you from making any noise. Yeah, so like you have basically rolling exact is like an extra flashy flourish. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So obviously the higher, again, I'll just go to speed because that's when we're talking about. The higher your speed number is, the far more likely you're going to succeed on yourself because you're going to roll underneath it. But the higher
and the far less likely that somebody else is going to beat it trying to hit you with a fire.
Exactly.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So every ability, every spell in the game is tied to one of your stats. And the level you cast of any ability is how many dice you throw. If you were casting a level 5 fireball, you would roll 5 dice. And each one that was the speed or over of your opponent is a successful hit. And the number of successful hits determines how much damage it actually does.
Nice.
So it's a whole lot of stat checks, basically.
Yeah.
Nice.
But with some very nice mechanics that allow, like you said, that flourish. And
yes.
If I recall correctly, there's just a lot of elements that just allow you to flavor what you do in unique ways that you find interesting for your character.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I try to really strongly support when I'm running a game. I love it when the players come up with the embellishments. But sometimes you get those players that just don't get it. So I'm like, all right, so I'm filling in the blanks and hoping they pick up on it and go with it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Or they're just not that comfortable coming up with material on their own in front of the crowd. Because that's true. A couple of players like that. They would rather the GM filled in the blanks and then they just made choices as to how to react.
Yep.
Yeah, and I remember when we were playing through, now that you're actually mentioning the mechanics, like that's such a simple mechanic. So just like the single dice that allows you to go ahead and adjudicate everything. And if I'm targeting you, it's against your stat. If I'm targeting myself, or if it's something happening to me, I'm targeting my own. And just that it flows really well, which is the one thing that I remember from the game. It's like the mechanics never got in the way of anything, right? Like whatever we wanted to go ahead and do, it was very easy to go ahead and determine whether or not we were successful, which was
and difficulties
really
obviously we could adjust. So if you're trying to do something really difficult, I would say there's a penalty to your speed. Like if you're running across ice, I'd be like, all right, it's a speed check minus 2. So suddenly you have to subtract 2 from your speed and you're trying to beat that instead.
Yeah.
Just because of the difficulty of the ice.
Yeah. Cool. All right,
well, I'm a fan of simple math.
Yeah.
Yes. It's designed. One thing that really bugged me when I was looking back into like RPGs, I was watching a lot of 5th edition D&D. I hadn't played Dungeons & Dragons since 2nd edition. So shows you how far back it was since I'd played Dungeons & Dragons. But I was watching a lot of videos of the game and I got annoyed how slow combat would happen. Just because so many different rules and you need this die and that die. And I'm like, combat is inherently quick. Like you have to react quick. And I wanted to create a mechanic where you can, like when we were playing, when you guys were in a fight, you'd have your turn and you better be thinking about your next turn because we're going to get right back to you really quick. So
no,
you
it
had
definitely
that,
did flow.
That urgency to actual combat in the game. It was still turn-based, but I like to keep it flowing pretty quickly. Like, all right, what are you doing? What, my turn again? And I'm like, yeah, we're back to you. What are you doing?
Nice.
And we even tried hard to throw you for loops during those combats, too.
Throwing everything. As we do, yeah.
Stealing tasers and...
I appreciate it.
Tossing cables.
Using tables and frisbees, yeah. Ultimate frisbee. Yeah.
I guess that brings it up to my question. So again, it's been 2 years now since we last spoke about Fae. And when we first played it with you, we played like the Dark Fae, the monsters in the mall, not the good guys. And from what I hear, this next time around when we play with you, we're going to be playing the other side. We're going to be playing the good guys. Is that true, first of all?
Yeah. Obviously, I was going to leave it up to you what you'd like to do, but yeah. I think not just destroying everybody might be an interesting side of things. Nice.
So what I wanted to ask about, and maybe you introduced this at the beginning when you were talking about like the nature of Fae. When we first engaged with it, it very much had that like dark Fae feel to it, where it's like the monsters were encouraged to be monstrous on some level. And right. It seems like that has been a progression over the last couple of years, where the type of game that we're about to go ahead and start playing is becoming more possible. So I want to ask about that transition. Like, what kind of led you in that direction? Why start introducing monsters that don't necessarily have to be monstrous? Or was that always something that was baked into the cake, and it was just like an interpretation thing that led us down that route?
So when I started designing this, if you go back, I have a comic series, which is what has turned into this game. And they really weren't meddling in the affairs of humans. I like the concept that we view Fae as monsters because they just have a different agenda and a different order of what's important that doesn't jive with what people are dealing with.
Sure.
I think it's that conflict that really makes them appear as monsters. And I like the concept of like alternative motives, basically. Humans have their routine. You get up, you do your podcast, you brush your teeth. And having something that's not part of that routine shut in there and seeing how it affects everything else was fascinating for me. Plus, I've always been a fan of monsters. The movies that you talk about, oh, when I was a kid, that terrified me. Those are the movies that I loved. Like, the scary kids movies are the ones I loved. I loved Secret of Nim was one of my all-time favorites. Dark Crystal. All the things that used to creep everyone else out. The stuff I loved. Return to Oz. I'm just trying to think through some of the stuff that like is generally viewed as creep for people. Like,
I mean, that the owl scene in Secret of Nim still comes to me in the dark, like when I'm by myself and feeling scared. So yeah, that movie's creepy. Loved it. Saw it a million times, but man, the owl scene is creepy AF.
Oh yeah, it's great. Like, I love.
For all the things that freaked me out as a kid, and I have funded psychologists and psychiatrists' cousins' families through college with the types of things that freaked me out as a kid. The Secret of Nim was never one of them. Weird as heck, that never freaked me out.
The owl with the glowing eyes when it...
Never bugged me.
If you notice in Fae, a lot of the creatures have glowing eyes. It's directly inspired by Don Bluth's movie there.
But at the same time, I saw Jaws and I refused to go near any liquid of any kind for weeks to the point where I got put in a hospital because I was dehydrated.
So the big difference is there. Jaws is based on something in reality.
Yep.
And so that's it taps into a different fear than the imaginary stuff.
Exactly. It's the things that are closest to reality for me that freak me out the most. Like the spider that was that big that crawled over my wife's pillow and off of her shoulder that I noticed in the glow of my cell phone last night. And I freaked out and we spent an hour trying to find the spider and myrtleize it so we could go to bed comfortably, which we did. But yeah, that's the kind of thing that would freak me out, even though I'm not as bad as Josh. I actually told my wife, I'm like, you're lucky you're not married to Josh. He'd have jumped his ass out the window at that point.
I mean, maybe. It's entirely possible.
On the upside, you shouldn't have to. Well, I don't know, actually. Are there spider creatures in Fae?
There are spiders to fear in Fae, yes. There's Arachne, and then there's also a couple of Japanese mythological creatures, which are like half woman, half spider, that I definitely have in there.
Cool. All right, gentlemen, I think we have time for one more round if the questions are quick. So I think it's worth a shot.
No pressure, Jay. You expound as much as you want.
You talk as much as you want. We'll try to ask questions that don't lead to half hour long answers.
Yeah.
We will not do any questions like, please describe your entire body of work.
One thing I did not mention, and I think it might have been from Glenn's question, was he was asking how Fae interact in the human world.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really get into that. It's very simple. Fae do not exist. And as long as no one thinks you exist at the end of the day, then you're doing well. There's always a roguelike element to the game of Fae where whatever you're doing, you have to at least do it sneakily or make sure no one survives to talk about it, because If you are discovered by humans, not only are humans after you, but the fae that allowed you to go to the mortal realm are also after you, because you should not be discovered. So you're basically
being hunted from both sides.
Nice. Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Fan roll dice to the ready. Your D10s this time instead D10s. Of instead D10s. Of 2D6. Yeah.
Yes, folks, they can be taught.
Yeah. All right, let's see what we got here.
Spirit of our last roll, I'm rolling 2D10s. I'm choosing the highest one.
Is it? Do we get to do? Is it 2D10 and get to pick the highest? Because
no,
that'd be really nice.
It's 1D10. Oh, I got an 8 again.
All right. I'm definitely going last. I rolled a 1.
I guess we were rolling off, Josh.
Oh, a critical failure roll off. All right.
Oh, no, this is Faye. Rowing low. You're rowing for yourselves. So you're actually doing good. The 8 was the worst.
Okay, fair enough. You're rolling for yourselves. You guys get to go first.
All right.
I like that.
What'd you get on your second roll there, Lunica?
A 1.
I got a 2.
Sounds like Josh is first. Lunica is first.
I am first.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Josh, you roll perfect 6s and then you roll perfect 1s.
Yeah. That's something's. Take him to Vegas or something.
It's over. He's used up all his luck.
I'm done.
All his luck. Yeah.
That means the patrons who are playing Star Trek Adventures with me on Sunday are going to have a grand freaking time.
Yeah, exactly.
Klingons are going to be polishing the ship. It's going to be terrible. It's all over. My question is very short form. It's really cool. You posted it on one of the socials or with the TotalCon page or one of the pages. But I saw something from you the other day where you were commenting about how cool it was to have somebody do a fae cosplay, and I just wanted you to talk about that moment and talk about the receptions you've had from players and other folks at the conventions you've been going to.
Last year, I'm not even sure which convention it was at, shame on me, somebody that I did not know and did not know I was there simply was cosplayed as Luna, which is on the cover of the fae book. She was literally just walking down the aisle with her friends. She was dressed as the character from the cover of the book. And suddenly her friend points over at my table, goes, "Oh my God, it's the book you're dressed as."
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's freaking fantastic. What? That's like I've arrived moment. Someone's cosplaying my game.
I was like, what is happening here? I took a picture because I couldn't process it. I'm like, somebody spent the time to make a costume for my character from the cover of my book.
Full on. Makeup, the whole
it was a great freaking costume.
It was amazing. I saw that picture. I'm like, wow.
If now, it was off even a little bit, I would have been like, all right, she's dressed as something else. It just looks like the character from my book. But no, she was dressed as that character.
Yeah. Now, knowing your muse for that particular painting, tell us about how you shared that with her.
For the particular painting, the cover of the main book?
For the cover of the book, yeah.
So how did I share that with the cosplayer?
No, with the muse.
Oh, so you're crossing up my covers. The cover of the player's guide is an illustration of my wife.
Okay.
And originally she was like, "You're not going to put me on the cover." I'm like, "Oh, I'm so putting you on the cover." So she's a little weirded out. I had the cover printed on a t-shirt for her to wear. She's like, "I'm wearing a t-shirt with my own picture on it." It's
nice.
Yeah. And the cosplayer was the one that I have the fig for.
No, that's a different character as well.
That's a different one too.
You are so confused. Man.
I am confused.
All the information goes in there, and he keeps it. It just doesn't always come back out in the right order.
Always come out in the right order.
It's like Boggle. You shake them, and then like it's rearranged into a new game.
So. Oh, I know why. Because I'm looking at the fig, and I'm reading the little story that goes with it, and Luna's name is there. That's why. I'm throwing the names off that way. And I'm really trying desperately to save my bacon, which is failing miserably. So
miserably,
terrible. But I just, it was awesome to see somebody cosplaying
pull the lever,
as one of your characters.
Pull the lever.
Yep. And the next expansion coming up, which is actually called Fae Mortals, where you play humans that are messed up in the Fae world. And messed up as in really messed up. The cover of that book has my granddaughter on it. So
nice.
Awesome.
Being taken away by a bunch of Fae creatures.
That's not terrifying at all.
No, there's no spiders on the cover.
Since the last time we spoke, Jay, actually, so my wife and I now have a baby. She's 15 months old now, but she is like cherubic and angelic in the face. It's somehow, I'm not sure how somebody that looks like me has a baby that looks like like Alice does, but But I can just imagine she also has quite the wild streak. So I can imagine her being one of those like typical kind of pixie looking little girls that's actually like a secret vampire hunter kind of thing. Yeah, that'd be amazing. All right, I'm going to let Leonika out of his misery and just roll into my question so that, he doesn't have to keep trying to go ahead and flog it, trying to get some sense over there. So one thing that you mentioned was that you have been writing all of these one-shots for Faye. So my question is admittedly going to be a little self-serving, but also a little bit of an opportunity for other content creators that maybe listen to the show out there, is that, first of all, when are you going to ask us to go ahead and write a one-shot for Faye? But the bigger question is really, do you have any sort of open license for the content or anything like that that would allow other content creators to write one-shots to go ahead and maybe put them on DM's Guild or something like that? Is there any sort of like mechanism for them to go ahead and do that, like a play kit, a licensing kit, and stuff like that?
So one thing I've told everybody who's bought the rulebook that's planning on running games is, if you come up with any adventures, I would love player-created modules. I would love to take your adventure, make sure it just fits into the lore, it doesn't conflict with something, but I would love to have players creating stuff. I would carry it, and I would split the proceeds on sales of it with the creators. It'd almost be like consignment game. Like, it'd be like, nice. All right, your adventure is now here at the table with everything else. And whenever it sells, I just take a note of it and I take my share, you take your share. I love the idea of the people that play the game creating what happens next. Faye takes place in the current modern day time. So the whole premise is like last year, the rule book came out. And then this year, Faye Forgotten came out. So the premise of Faye Forgotten is, now that Faye, for a year now, have been leaking back into the human world, the things that they left behind are starting to notice it as well. So it's all happening in real time. So when somebody creates a new adventure, I'd love to find a way to add it into the current landscape of what's actually happening in the world.
Nice.
So I've had a couple of people that have started sending some drafts my way. I know lots of artists. I know lots of writers. So anybody that's looking to develop stuff, I can definitely pair people up. Make something. I'll just, again, make sure it for continuity, it doesn't conflict with the main premises. It's very hard being the creator and being the sole writer, artist, everything else for this game, and still do all my other art projects and the work I do for other publishers and stuff like that. If anybody wants to create stuff for this game, I am 100% supportive. I'll do what I can to help. I will introduce you to people that art may go well with your writing style. And developing a vast fan-based world to go with it is something I truly want to do. In fact, tomorrow I'm meeting with a couple people that have indie comic series that we've actually worked out how they can work with Faye, and we're actually going to create modules for their indie comics in the game of Faye. So their fans that read their comics can now play their comics using the Faye mechanics.
Nice.
That's pretty hot.
Awesome.
It's all about the community. I want this to be everybody's game. I created it. I got it started, but I want it to be something for everyone to just have fun with and nice. Do their own thing with.
Sounds like gentlemen will have to throw another project into the hopper and see when it comes out. Cool. All right, Glenn, you have got the last question of the evening. So why don't you go ahead and bring it home?
All right. Jay, my last question of the evening, I think, will do a great job of wrapping us up, as it's going to foreshadow future projects, which I know you already mentioned briefly when you were talking about cover art with your granddaughter, but would you let us know what's next for Faye and maybe teaser your upcoming Kickstarter that might be launching in the fall for the latest development in the world of Faye and what it means to all of the Faye creatures that are currently already existing in it?
So the next book coming out, I believe, is going to be called Fae Mortals. The premise is that you can now play humans in the Fae world. It's actually mostly developed already. It was going to be the first expansion, but then things got really complicated when I started realizing how to integrate humans into the Fae rules in a balanced way. So I'm like, I need to step back and let it digest a little bit first before I could get it out there. So we did Fae Forgotten first. But basically the premise is that you are humans that are usually aware of Fae. You can play things like alchemists who learn how to extract abilities from Fae. So you can basically create potions and stuff by destroying Fae creatures. You can also play hunters, which learn ways of resisting Fae abilities in order to hunt them down and trap them and You get an alchemist and a hunter together, and you guys are just creating a whole plethora of potions and stuff like that. Nice. And you also have religious fanatics, which are basically humans that have been blessed by the powers from Avalon. Like, queens will choose their champions kind of a thing, where these humans will do things for their queens and exchange their granted powers. This is all happening because now that Fae are in the human world, the powers that let them over here see the technology, they see advantages in having power over the other Fae by having control of people. So they're starting to reach out and mess with people. There's also, it's not called mutants. I can't think of what I call it at the time, but mutants, they're actually mortals that have Fae powers they can't control. So you pick a power from one of the trees. If you chose fireball, basically you could just accidentally shoot off blasts of fire. Like, it's just like a ticking time bomb kind of a problem. Like, you can't really cover it. It just happens, which becomes a wild card. So one thing I added to Fae mortals is your humanity, which is a new stat for mortals, where basically every time you use Fae powers, you lose your humanity and you start collecting insanities. Every time you run out of humanity points, you roll on a chart, and the chart is extremely long. There are lots of different kinds of crazy things that your character has to start incorporating in the roleplay as they go. Say the first time you roll on the chart, you get an 8. You take whatever the quirk is at 8. Then the next time you run out of points, you start there in your roll. So say you rolled a 4 the second time, you would then go to 12 and add that as a new mental problem you have. So as you're playing mortals in the Fae world, you lose touch with being a human more and more. There are some really quirky ones. One of my favorites, and I always bring it up, is an insanity called boop. It's very simple. You do not believe something exists unless you can go up and touch it. So you cannot target a creature. You cannot interact with anything until you go up to it and literally put your finger on it and say boop. Okay, it's real. Now you can deal with it. So that's
Booped me.
Yes. Yeah. But there's all, and there's one called I Want to Be a Pirate, which means you can choose to gouge out an eye, chop off a hand, or chop off a foot. Like, that moment, like, your brain just decides, all right, one of these is going to go. Which one you're removing?
Fantastic. But
they get progressively worse as you climb up the chart. Basically, the more times you brain fart yourself into insanity, you just add new flavor.
And if the insanity gets deeper the further down the chart you go, and you're always going back to your last total when you roll again and adding to it, you're destined to go deeper down the chart, right? That's a good way to set that up.
To answer your question, Fae Mortals is going to be the next expansion where you play humans that have been tainted, I suppose would be the best word tainted. For it.
I like that. That's a good way to put it. I love it. They've been bent.
Compromised.
Broken.
Yes. Or they're breaking while you play them.
Yeah, exactly.
And when we play our AP with you here shortly, will we be playing in the mortals category?
I'm wondering if maybe we should, since we did the one-shot with the mall before the Kickstarter. Maybe I'll put together a little mortals adventure for you guys.
I love it. That sounds fantastic. Nice. Yeah.
And hey, then when the Kickstarter goes live, you'll already have something to link to.
Yep. That's right.
And a fantastic segue, Glenn. So we will be meeting again shortly in a couple of weeks here to go ahead and record the actual play, which will begin appearing on the channel here next week. Probably at least 2 parts, maybe 3 parts. We'll see how long it takes. But yeah, really looking forward to playing that with you again, Jay. Before we let you go this evening, though, where can everybody find you? How can they find information on Fae? How can they pick up a copy of the book? Everything like that.
You can get the digital version of the book on DriveThruRPG. I just go on there and type in FAE, the proper way to spell Fae, and the whole lineup of stuff should pop right up for you. You can also go to my website, which is my publishing house, which is called Eden Park Tales. So Eden Park and then Tales is T-A-L-E-S. You go to EdenParkTales.com. That'll take you there. You can find me on social media. My last name is spelled odd. It's M-O-O-E-R-S. So if you punch that in whenever you're searching for me, Facebook, Instagram, X, you should be able to find me. And on YouTube, there's channels with Fae as well. I'm very approachable. Anyone can send me a shout out through social media. I'm happy to share links and everything about the game with anybody. So come on down. Let's have some fun.
Nice. We'll
look forward to it. People in the mall.
And really looking forward to go ahead and throw in some dice again. This will be great. And we are looking to go ahead and bring on at least one friend of the show that hasn't been on in quite some time that we're really excited to maybe get him in here to go ahead and throw some dice. So this will be a good time. And again, so the actual play begins next week here on the channel. Jay, thanks so much again for joining us. We'll get together with you again in a couple weeks to go ahead and record the actual play. And until then, everybody, thanks for listening. Go check out Jay Moore's work. Check out Faye and be watching for the Kickstarter coming up this fall. And make sure you tune in the show next week to go ahead and hear the first part of the second actual play that we've done a Faye. Really looking forward to it. So thanks again for joining us, Jay. Appreciate it as always.
Thank you, guys.
Always great to see you, my dear friend. We'll catch up very soon in person as well as gaming digitally.
Yeah. Indeed.
We'll talk to you again next week.
Have a good
night. Good night, all.
Thank you for joining us. This has been Tabletop Journeys. We would love to hear your feedback on our show today. Join us at www.ttjourneys.com, where you can subscribe to the blog to leave comments and see all the content that we publish beyond the podcast.
You can also stay in touch by subscribing to our Twitter, Tumblr, or Instagram at ttjourneys, joining our Facebook group, Tabletop Journeys, or by sending an email directly to podcast@ttjourneys.com. Our full episodes come out every week on Friday, and every Tuesday features actual play and gameplay showcase episodes. Looking for early access? You can support the show and get episodes before everyone else at www.patreon.com/TTJourneys. Check it out today and see all the awesome benefits we bring to our supporters.
Lastly, if you're listening to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podchaser, Spotify, or Audible, we would really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to the podcast on that platform. Thank you for listening and for being a part of our growing community. And we bid you fair tides, friends, for legends await.